when I have you guys on, we kind of like to open it up to all sorts of conversations, preferably in the legal world. And we give our phone number, 312-981-7200. You can call in, you can text in, and you can let us know any question that you might have. We don't go too much into the political aspect of things. I'm already seeing some questions about that. But if it has a legal ramification, something that the administration and you're curious about, we try and look at things and we do kind of we put our nonpartisan hats on and try and do our best job at that. But keep on calling 312-981-7200. If these guys don't know the answer, there's someone usually that will get to us by the end of the show, one of the many lawyers that we've either had on this program or on the other programs on WGN. I've got all their numbers. I can text them on a Saturday, and they can usually call in. You've been busy, Mike Leonard. How's life?
I have been. One first of all, shout-out to a second-time listener, Noberto, a good friend, and in a difficult situation listening to us. And I do want to cover the most important question, since we're not here next week.
Okay.
It's exciting.
Three top favorite Easter candies, guys. I need to know.
You obviously didn't hear me when I was in for Lisa Dent the other day.
No, I didn't.
I just said that one of the reasons I'm not a huge Easter fan is, one, the date moves erratically. I know it's tied to the lunar something or another, but Easter can be at any time, right? I mean, not any time. March or April, essentially.
John, it does move a lot. Come on.
What does that have to do with the candy,
does not move very
Hold
much.
On, I'm getting there.
Okay,
I'm just saying
Jesus,
that it's
a long
it's
way
hard
to, get there.
To I'm the host. I get to do what I want.
That's true.
It's hard to like have a tent pole around it because I'm like, wait, when is it again? Anyways, I don't like I love candy. I don't like Easter candy. I don't like jelly beans. I don't really like Peeps, and I don't like chocolate bunnies or the creamy eggs.
What a downer. I'm just going to spit it out right now. Brock's jelly beans, traditional, big, fat, waxy, number one. Number two, those chocolate things that have the marshmallow inside or shaped like an egg.
I agree.
And then three, I hate Peeps, but at Easter I have to have two or three of them.
100%. That's my exact order. By the way, I love jelly beans.
Okay.
Traditional.
Not this nonsense Ronald Reagan
like the weird,
ate, or the high-end
weird
ones.
The flavors.
All right. Great, but we have three people already on the line ready with actual legal
they
questions.
They want to talk about this too, John. You're going to find out. They're going to want to talk
Thank
about candy.
Thank you, Mike. That was very fun.
I already have to be able to turn off both of your mics here. Okay. I'm going to go to Casey first on WGN. Hello, Casey. You're on WGN. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. I don't know which guy to ask, but is there a way to see if there's a class action lawsuit against a group or somebody?
Oh, like if there's like a list of class action lawsuits somewhere that's publicized that you would like maybe want to join?
Exactly.
Oh, that's a great question.
Well, but you have a particular issue, right, or a product? Is that correct?
Yeah, it'd be getting fired because of having COVID.
The
COVID chat.
That's not a class. That would just be an individual case.
Hold on. Patrick Dolan's an employment lawyer.
I am. No, go ahead, Casey.
I did hear that there was talk of a class action lawsuit against the medical group, and I was just wondering how you find that out.
Is this in, like, the hospital sphere? You don't have to say the name of the place or the name of the company. Okay.
Yes.
And you were fired because either you or someone you know because you refused the vaccine? Was that it?
Correct.
Okay. I have heard a little bit about class action lawsuits about people that had been let go because they didn't want to take the vaccine, and things have been rescinded. Patrick, some thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure if there's a place where you can go where you can find out if a class has started against a particular employer for a COVID issue. But there was a lot of litigation when companies were forcing folks to get their COVID vaccine shots, and people tried to get out of that based on either a religious exemption or a health exemption. Frankly, those didn't go very far. So I don't know about a specific class action against a local hospital or medical group. So I don't know what the basis is, but I would just say generally those are very difficult. And also, if you're talking about a class action, if folks are bringing different religious bases for saying that they don't want to take the vaccine, that could be an issue too. So
I've seen a lot. I'm just kind of looking up right now. And in fact, one of our freaking guests on the show, Jenna Green from Reuters, talks about how a lot of people who were fired for refusing COVID vaccines are starting to win lawsuits in court. So that
based on what?
I haven't read the whole article yet. Oh, okay. I'll have to text Jenna and see if she can come on and explain it. But we can dive a little deeper into looking for that, Casey, during a break. Mike, you got a thought?
Yeah, I would Google the employer's name and class action. I had a friend in a completely different context who had a medical device case, and I just Googled it for him. You know, I put the product in and class action and came up with like three or four hits and then referred him to the lawyer. So I would Google the name of the employer in class action and see if you come up with stuff, because typically if a lawyer files that, they it's want public. Publicity to it.
Yeah.
So if it's out there, you're probably going to find it by Google search.
100%. Right.
Thanks, Casey. Thanks for calling. We'll try and dig a little deeper, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Have a good one. That's Casey. 773 says, another episode of Who Can I Sue? Pure Chicago communism. I don't quite know what those two things have to do with each other, but that's not... The show's called Let's Get Legal. We answer legal questions here on WGN. Okay, let's go to Gail on line three. Gail, what do you have for Mike and Patrick and our other litany of lawyers?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great, Gail. What do you got?
Okay, so... my mother recently passed away, and she is in a senior housing development.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, you know, she had to put like an entrance fee down, which, you know, after her passing is refundable once they rent the apartment. My question is, once I get the apartment cleaned out and ready to rent, how long do I have to keep paying her rent? Is there a limit on that?
That's a function of contract. So whatever the agreement is with the place where she lives, that should dictate exactly what the term is.
Okay, so if I go over the contract, so it could keep going indefinitely is basically what you're saying.
Well, there should be a contract thing that says after X amount of time, once you're cleaned out and gone, here's when the expiration of this contract is.
Because it depends when you're leaving. If you're leaving before the term of the agreement, then you may have to pay through the term. But if you're leaving when the term ends, then probably nothing.
But the other part of the contract has to mitigate their damages, meaning
if you
they have
early.
To try to stop their loss. And so most of these places re-rent them immediately. I'd be very aggressive about inquiring about whether it's re-rented, when, and trying to get that money. And sometimes you have to do that by lawyer letter. Sometimes you can just be a pain in their you-know-what by, you know, continuing to reach out to them. But I would be aggressive about figuring out if it's re-rented, because then they've mitigated their damages. They can't be collecting rent twice.
But start with the contract.
Yeah, do you have a lease scale or a contract of some kind in paper?
You know what? This just happened
I'm sorry
Tuesday.
To hear that.
That's, you know what? My mom was 105. So
whoa! Gail, that's
impressive.
I mean, it still makes it hard. It's still hard, of course, but amazing.
And we had her 105th birthday 2 weeks before, so she had a big celebration. So, but you know, the thing is I'm from Wisconsin originally, and the assisted living places there do not get this upfront fee. That is, you know, $200,000.
Wow.
Plus the rent that you pay every month. So not only do they have that money, but then I have to keep paying rent. And, of course, my question naturally becomes, well, you have this money. Why don't you use that for her rent?
Yeah.
And the answer is no.
The agreement probably says you can't, but I would pay particular attention to the provisions in the agreement and then be aggressive about getting that money down get that money they put down back, and then be aggressive about not continuing to pay rent when they've already probably rented the place out, and that you may have a claim against them for breach of contract.
Hey, Gail, we have a lawyer, an elder care lawyer, who's been on many programs here on WGN. Have you ever heard Kerry Peck? He's often on with John Williams. Have you heard him before, Gail?
No, but you know what? I will take that number if you want to get off the radio and give me that number. I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. His name is Kerry Peck. Kerry Peck, P-E-C-K. And the firm is called Peck Ritchie, R-I-T-C-H-E-Y. And I got the phone number here for that they have on the website. It's 312-818-3378.
Okay, great.
He's great. And it's a free consultation. They'll talk through everything for you. He'll be able to guide you, him and his team, where to go, okay?
And I'll read the contract first before I call him.
Yeah, that's always good. He's going to ask for that first anyways. Good call. Okay, we're off to a good start, guys. Feeling pretty good about this, huh?
Excellent.
Solid, John. Very solid.
I need a couple bites of the sandwich you brought in.
It looks really good.
Yeah, let's take a break. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Give us a call. Ask some questions. We'll get some answers for you, hopefully. And if not, we'll have some fun while doing it. Next on WGN. 129 on WGN. Got a minute before the news. 847 wants to know, what constitutes a workers' comp retaliation? Patrick Dolan, the world of workers' comp, you don't particularly deal in as an employment lawyer, but it's adjacent to what you do. That is a sphere that, not the retaliation, but workers' comp is usually in its own little system, right?
It is. It's a completely different administrative system. So if you file claims, you're going to go in that workers' comp system, kind of like bankruptcy is to civil court, a completely different environment.
But if you're retaliated against Mike Leonard, that enters common court, right?
Yeah, so we have some of those cases. So if a person files a work comp claim, then their employer fires them. And the best case or the better cases are, it happens, you file the claim, you get fired within a relatively short period of time after filing it. You have a case in court in a circuit court, Cook County or whatever county in for retaliatory discharge under Illinois law. And it's just a regular lawsuit. It's not in the comp system. You can actually even have a claim when you suffer workplace injury and you get fired, and you can still make the argument that they fired you because they believed you were going to file a claim.
Right. The forklift hurt you and they're like, oh, you're gone.
Exactly.
And then it's because they know something's going to happen. Also, you got 15 seconds.
Go. Also, real quick, you don't have to be fired. If you suffer a job detriment as a result of the anticipatory or the filing of the workers' comp claim, then you also have a retaliation claim.
Nice job, guys, answering that quickly. I appreciate it. The reason why? We have the news. We'll take more of your questions, 312-981-7200, after this on WGN. This is Let's Get Legal. We are powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, and it's a grab bag show, which means call in with any legal question. We may not have all the answers for you. I'm not a lawyer myself, so I probably won't have the answers. Patrick Dolan is an employment lawyer, so he's got some answers in that sphere. Mike Leonard's a federal defense attorney who also does whistleblower cases and apparently workers' comp retaliation cases. Yeah. Mike, I didn't know you were even in that world.
Well, I didn't want to compete with Patrick, so I was just kind of keeping that under the hood.
But we'll do our best, Mike, to answer the questions. And our next caller didn't want to use their name, which always makes Mike Leonard say, take the call, because he's excited about something juicy. I'm going to call him Bill just so he knows how to respond. That is not his name, I don't think, unless I guessed out of the blue. But Bill, what is your question?
Hi. Pritzker passed the law, paid leave act for everyone.
Yep.
I'm a senior. I took temp work from an agency that keeps me fairly busy. Logged all the hours for the year of 24, which I think it began, January of 2024. And my agency tells me, I've contacted the Department of Labor, they said it's valid, I should, you know, meet the requirements. They say that I can take sick leave, but I'm under penalty of suspension if I don't call ahead of time, and therefore it doesn't meet the requirements of what I believe that Pritzker passed.
So you're saying you believe you're entitled to sick time, but the agency is pushing back on that?
No. The Paid Leave Act for Everyone, I believe I meet the requirements for that, and they're skirting that by saying I can only take sick leave, which is the equivalent of it. They're going to give me the equivalent of the hours I work. For every 40, you get one hour of paid time off, and after the whole year, I, you know, met the requirements for 40 hours. But they're calling it something other than what Pritzker passed. So what my question, the Department of Labor has gone back and forth with me, and this has gone on for months, and no one's really reaching out to me to further this along.
Bill, I want to just make sure, I want to make sure I understand. And you obviously know the situation. You're trying to explain it. It's not easy to. We totally know the law you're talking about. Chicago even has more specific. Are you in the city of Chicago where the work was done, Bill?
No.
Okay, that's fine. I know that it is statewide. I was just asking a follow-up that also Chicago has additional ones. So I was just trying to clarify. So you think that you have sick time, or do you think you also deserve PTO, meaning you should be able to take for whatever you want?
Well, that's what the law says. The law says I should be without question. But they until I started hammering them with the questions after a few months of going back and forth with them, they came up with the equivalency of sick leave under threat of suspension if I don't meet the requirement. You know, if I don't...
Right. So they're saying, no, you must be... It must be only used for sick time. That's what the agency's telling you, not you can use it for whatever you want.
They are not enacting Pritzker's law that I can take it for whatever I want, whenever I want.
Okay, yeah. That's all I was asking. Patrick?
Yes.
Start unpacking that.
Okay. So we're really talking about two different laws, right? He is entirely correct. The Paid Leave for Workers Act, which he is talking about, means you accumulate 1 hour for each 40 hours worked. You can use it for any purpose.
Sick or vacation.
You don't even have to tell them. Okay. Mm-hmm. You just take the time. The Sick Leave Act is something totally different. You have to use it for sick time, but that's not what he's referring to, apparently. So if his employer is telling him that he needs any justification or basis or reason to take leave under that Paid Leave for Workers Act, that is completely wrong.
Okay.
Okay.
So anyone in Illinois, even hourly employees or temp employees working through an agency,
yes,
for every 40 hours you work, you're eligible for an hour of paid time off.
That's
for
correct.
For whatever reason you want.
That's correct.
Chicago then also last year kind of upped the ante, right?
Yeah, well, actually, the state is 35, local is 40, so it really depends on where you are. But the point is that you can use the leave for any purpose. The employer can't even ask you what the purpose is.
Okay.
So that's why, and everybody, so it doesn't matter if he's working for a temp agency, that's his employer, so they have to follow the law. Every employer has to follow that, no matter how many employees they have.
Bill, do you have Patrick Dolan's number? Oh, he forgot I called him Bill. 312-332-7800.
I'd be happy to write a letter to clarify that, because it seems like they are not. I agree with him. It seems like they're not allowing him to take leave that he is entitled to.
Fake Bill, you got to call Patrick, okay?
Okay, give me the first three of the number. I got 332-7800. Can you give me the rest?
Yes, so here we go. It's 312-332-7800. 312-332-7800. Great call, Bill. Thank you.
And sorry, Bill, if your name really is Bill, for John ruining your career and getting you fired. But good work, John.
Well, no, then he can call you, you can sue for retaliation.
There we go.
I'm just trying to give you more business.
I can sue for retaliation.
Thank you.
Mike only has workers' comp retaliation. Remember?
I'll leave everything to Patrick. I'll handle the state and federal criminal cases.
There we go. I will say that it got really confusing when the state did something and Chicago did something else, and the hours are all different. I thought the state was only for sick leave, and the city upped the ante by making it sick and paid time off, but you're telling me I'm wrong.
No, sorry, yes, you are.
Okay.
The length of the time you get is different depending on where you are, that's all. But you have protected leave for any reason and protected sick leave.
And we've had this question before, but I'll just ask it again. If an employer now knows this sick leave in Chicago or Illinois, and they have a lot of part-time employees, and they adjust the hours of your work in order to not have to pay PTO or pay less of it, that may be squirrely or seem inappropriate, but it doesn't appear to be illegal.
That's a good summary. Yes, that is correct.
Because we get that call a lot from a lot of people.
And people ask me too.
Which is interesting, and I just want to say that sometimes passing a law to benefit a lot of people, that might seem great. Doesn't everyone deserve PTO? Absolutely.
Of course.
And you have people calling our show saying they're getting a third of the hours they used to get because of the new law, because the person doesn't want to pay in PTO. And we've had people say, I wish they didn't pass the law, and then I just had all my hours back.
Yeah,
I wish you could voluntarily say, I will opt out as an employee. But then I could see a whole other realm of other problems there, too.
They're trying to draw the line somewhere, I guess, but I understand the issue.
All right. 312-981-7200. 708 agrees with me, which means that text goes to the top.
Right.
I'm with John. Easter, non-religious stuff, like the rabbits and the eggs and all that, the candy, is for the birds. The true sign of spring is the Masters Golf Tournament, which this texter is watching while listening to the show. And also spring is when they can plant annuals, which you should wait until Mother's Day weekend. As eager as we are all out to do that, wait till we know that last frost is gone, as you all know.
You know, one of my favorite things is that first Masters commercial or trailer in February. Mm. When you see that, you're like, oh, We're almost there.
That's usually when you're in Palm Springs anyway, so you're having an early spring, Patrick Dolan.
I don't know what
I'm
you're
sorry, guys.
About.
I'm going to push back and get some Masters. If I'm like asleep on the couch on a Sunday in the final rounds, then I'll watch it, but otherwise I don't care. I don't care about the green jacket.
You're all about the Bulls.
I don't care about Amen Corner. I don't care.
Amen.
Okay.
You know about Amen Corner,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do. Yes. I say Amen.
Does John know about Amen or Amen Corner?
Yes, I watch the Masters like a normal human adult.
Well, you certainly don't eat candy like a normal human, so, I mean, you got something going for you.
Oh, I definitely eat candy.
This is fun.
Let me just correct one thing.
Okay, go ahead, John.
If there's a basket full of Easter candy in front of my face, jelly beans, Peeps, chocolate bunnies, three things I don't particularly like, I will eat the entire basket.
Okay.
I have a sugar tooth any other normal human.
But you're otherwise throwing an entire wet blanket on Easter and Easter bunnies and baskets and ruining the week for millions of Chicagoans. Other than that, you're a great guy.
Let's take a break. Get your legal questions in 312-91-7200 here on WGN. And this is Let's Get Legal. We are powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Patrick Dolan is to my left on microphone number three. He's an employment lawyer. To my right, and Mike always takes this chair. And Patrick, you were in the room first. I'm surprised you didn't take Mike number two.
You know what? That's usually my chair, but I felt like wanted to give Mike that chair today because I know he likes it.
This is also the position you were in when you won.
I know. Maybe that's why.
Won the the holiday. Battle.
Maybe some won in quotation marks.
No, I didn't. Just
the Home Alone parents on trial.
That was such a rigged jury vote.
No. And let's not go backwards. You know, I'm the one that brought it up.
Let's look forward to the next one.
Yeah, we'll have to do something fun in December, something new and different.
A long way away, Patrick.
Yes. Okay. 216 wants to know, whistleblowers, and Mike Leonard, you've experienced in this, whistleblowers have been in the national news a lot lately. Are whistleblowers' identity typically revealed? And if so, how does that not discourage people from coming forward where they'd likely be in danger of retaliation in any situation, high profile or not?
Well, sometimes yes, sometimes no. So the cases we deal with a lot, either at the federal level or state level, are called QUITAM or False Claims Act cases.
QUITAM.
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 It goes back to the time of Lincoln when people would rip off the government contractors.
Shocker.
You know, say that, hey, we sold you 100 logs when you only sold them two. So the idea was to encourage people when the federal government or state government is getting ripped off to come forward and blow the whistle, right? So what you can do is file a lawsuit under seal, meaning nobody sees it except for you and the government. So the company doesn't know you filed it. And you're essentially saying, hey, this company or person, entity, whatever, has ripped off the federal government for money or state government. These are very common in like healthcare fraud types of cases.
Do you have to have worked for the place or could you just, it could be your neighbor runs this company and you know something shady's going on?
Either one, great question. So you just have to have direct and independent personal knowledge. So if someone tells you about it, you know, that not, might not be sufficient, but you can sometimes actually put the case together by your own research, et cetera, et cetera. But the best cases, the strongest ones in terms of having direct and independent knowledge is like you work there.
Is there
so
an
you
incentive?
See what's going on.
Is there an incentive perhaps for coming forward?
Oh, huge. Yeah. So you can actually get up to a 30% of the recovery,
whoa,
right? So imagine if you have a really good case where it's a $100 million case, right? The government's being ripped off. You could get 30% of that recovery. In terms of keeping yourself anonymous, you're only anonymous while the case is under seal, which gives the government time to review the case and decide, we want to take it over and litigate it, or we don't. And most of the times they don't.
Okay, so it's under seal, meaning the government has eyes on it. You obviously filed it with your lawyer. And one of two things can happen. The government can say, ooh, that's juicy and big enough. We're going to go ahead and tackle that. Does that person lose that incentive then, or does the government still give them a third or 30% of what they litigate?
If the government takes over the case and litigates or settles it, you get a smaller percentage, right? Most often, probably 95% of the time or more, the government declines. Not because it's not a good case, but they have very limited resources. And then the case comes out of seal, meaning it's now public. So your client's identity is now public, and you litigate the case just like any other lawsuit. And when you prevail, if you prevail, you get a higher share of the recovery, and your attorney can get their attorney's fees.
So you're representing the whistleblower, and let's say, as in most cases, the government doesn't tackle it, which is kind of amazing. Like, if the government's being frauded out of $120,000, that's probably small potatoes to them, but you think they'd want to send a message, but I'll leave that for another day. It's a lot of money to litigate these things. So you and your client are going after... So. Who's the case versus who v who? Like
whoever. For example, you know, many years ago, one of our first big ones was against a healthcare company that was a PBM, a pharmacy benefits manager, who had all these contracts with the state and federal governments, right? And some of the allegations were, for example, they were reusing and reselling return drugs, that they were improperly, intentionally switching people's drugs so they could make more money, things like that. So our clients were people who were pharmacists working at that pharmacy benefit manager who decided to blow the whistle and be the plaintiffs against that company. So the defendant is whoever the company is that's ripping off the government.
And it's, you're suing that company as a plaintiff. They're the defendants. But you're really doing it on behalf of the government.
Correct. Yeah, you're stepping into the shoes of the government. And, you know, your listener makes a great point. It's dicey. My clients in that case was on the front page of the newspaper in the state of Florida. And they were walked into work that day. Everyone had the paper out. And literally, except for a couple people, no one would talk to them. They were like pariahs.
I would have taken a sick day.
They were like
day.
Pariahs.
And you get 30% of what who does the government get the other 70% then?
Correct.
Interesting. I mean, I like that system, right? I think that we all want inspectors general that can go everywhere and find every little bit of fraud, but that's not possible. Often it's the people who are working for the company or the neighbor of the person who know something, and it incentivizes them to come forward. They get paid, and the government hopefully would save money in the long run by not litigating it themselves and then ending the fraud and corruption.
Yeah, another point your listener, I think, is getting to is there's all sorts of whistleblowing. It's not always someone filing a lawsuit. It can be someone just reporting someone to a federal agency or to prosecutors or whoever. And yeah, that's anonymous, right? But if a case goes forward and a case is made, sometimes they're not going to be anonymous. They might be a witness and be revealed and or have to testify.
And at the end of the day, yeah, being a whistleblower takes courage.
It does. It
Absolutely.
Does. Patrick, it takes a lot of patience.
Mike and I have been talking as long as we can while Patrick has had his mouth open near the microphone because I know he wants to talk. Go ahead, Dolan. What do you got?
So what I was going to say is you can also take that and go a half step forward. So I assert a lot of retaliation-based claims in a demand letter. You can also, I say QITAM.
QITAM.
Yeah, QITAM. What do you do? What did you call it?
QITAM.
Okay, I don't say that. I mean, that's like awkward.
Well, maybe you're not in the news.
Maybe you're not in the biz.
So the point is that you can use those facts and those claims in a demand letter so you don't have to file the lawsuits. In other words, you're negotiating a settlement. If you want to keep it confidential or private, you have these claims that you can assert. You negotiate them for a separation package because maybe you just don't want to come forward.
So you're saying if something at work is squirrely that's happening, that,
yeah,
you know, on illegal that they did with
or
you
could and, or could be illegal,
right. And you don't want to face retaliation,
right?
Instead, you'd rather work out a settlement where maybe you're not going to work for that company,
right,
anymore. So it's like whistleblower light.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
because you're
had
not
a lot
helping
of,
anyone else, you're just getting,
yeah,
out of there.
That's exactly right. But I mean, that's what you're trading off, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to do it, so you can get a separation and you can get out of the environment that you probably don't want to be in. I've represented a lot of nurses and doctors and folks in medical fields who have very legitimate concerns, like Mike brought up, but they don't want to sue anybody.
So it's not like a whistleblower, you're just a whistler. And you
very good,
right? I
yeah,
mean, that's
I
what it is.
Yes,
that,
you
want
some form of John Hansen comedy?
No, that's
I
don't
it's not
know.
Comedy.
I don't know.
That's like, succinct.
No.
Trying to boil it down.
No, I think that's probably
that's
right. And also, they want out. They don't want to be a part of that anymore.
If you use that, you have to.
I might use it. I'll put a footnote to John Hansen if I call someone a whistler.
Like a footnote, yeah.
Turn off your microphone. 312-981-7200. Get your questions in for these guys. We got news coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Then more. Let's Get Legal. Mike Leonard. And what's your name? Patrick Dolan here on WGN. No problem. Having an interesting back and forth on the text line with the person that asked that really great question about retaliation. It was. It opened up a whole discussion. The texter seems to not be satisfied, or, you know, to their credit or not. They just say, look, there isn't enough incentive for some cases for people to be whistleblowers if you don't get to remain anonymous throughout the entire process. And, Mike, I guess that's just the way that cookie crumbles, right? I mean, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you're not guaranteed to be anonymous the whole thing, and that's just how the system works. You can't litigate a case in secret, so the courts won't allow that to happen, and I get it. Some people would say that's enough of a disincentive not to do it, and like you said before, it takes courage. It's also a risk. No one wants to get fired, even if they have a claim for retaliation. No one wants to be able to be Googled and it says you're a whistleblower and no one's going to hire you. So there's a lot of practical reasons why people don't do it. It's the same thing with reporting crimes. You know, some people want to report them, some people don't. And there's risks to doing all the things we're talking about.
If there was something that the person or anyone out there wanted to be a whistleblower, but there was actually like a legitimate fear of safety or well-being, do the courts make any exceptions or help for those, or it had to be pretty extreme in that case?
Yeah, I'm
like anonymous witness testimony or something.
No, never seen that happen. I don't think that's going to happen. But look, I mean, you can only unfortunately be protected so far. What's the great movie, Karen Silkwood, where that
Aaron Brockovich?
Oh, the Silkwood case, yeah. Where the person, I think it was based on a true story, they came forward. This is the real dark side, and they end up getting killed.
Yes.
So I think that was actually a true story.
Yeah,
so
it was a true story.
It's not going to happen.
But you know, you can take a half a step and see if you can, again, you know, write a demand letter, negotiate a settlement, and move on. You don't have to file a lawsuit. But to your point, John, if they're concerned about some safety issue or a larger issue, then you know what? Mike outlined it. Those are your choices. But you don't have to do that.
847 texted in, John, I take issue with your statement that everyone is entitled to paid time off. First of all, I kind of did say that. I guess I mean that it comes with some qualifications to it. The second part of the text was, where is this entitlement found in the Ten Commandments? I don't know if they are referring to the amendments instead, which is what our rule of law is based off of. There are a lot of protections for people out there or laws that grant power and privilege to certain people that are found nowhere in the 10 amendments or the subsequent 17, making a total of 27 that exist. The Constitution is a framework for setting up the rest of the body of laws with which legislatures choose to do or not do. 847 goes on to say this is only imposed by some legislatures, making an already hostile business environment even more hostile. That part I can see the argument for, right? Just like what we're saying, that some businesses are now losing money and losing a small business, perhaps. Although there are exemptions for number of employees, right, Patrick Dolan?
Yes.
So if you are running a little coffee shop with 3 employees, I think you're exempt from this.
Yes.
So there are exemptions. But absolutely, the debate about whether a policy is good or not is very complicated. Just like some workers saying, I wish this law didn't exist. I'd rather have more hours than lose hours because my company doesn't want to pay me PTO. There are a lot of idiosyncrasies when laws are written. Just to say that they are not found in the Ten Commandments or Amendments, I'm not sure what this texture exactly was going for there, doesn't have any bearing on that. That's the rule book. That's the framework.
Can't do anything about that.
Yeah. Ralph, I'm going to get to you in one moment, but Jane had a whistleblower question, which I think is a good point since we were just talking about it. Go ahead, Jane. What are you thinking? Jane, hello? Hello, Jane? 1, 2, 3. I'm going to put Jane on hold, and let's see if she can come on back. But let's get to Ralph now. Ralph, what do you want to ask?
Okay, I guess my question is considering the One Day in Rest and Sevens Act and pyramiding of overtime. Recently, we got a new contract, and in the past, on a 48-hour week, when employees work 48 hours, we always got paid time and a half at the last 8 hours after the 40. But now with the new language, we have an agreement that if a day falls on your seventh day, that you get paid double time. And now if that seventh day should fall on like that Monday of a 48-hour week, the company now only pays that 8 hours at straight time. And, you know, I'm trying to understand like a definition of pyramiding, if that would be considered pyramiding of overtime, getting premium pay twice in 1 week.
I need like a whiteboard to follow this. I'm sorry, Ralph. Do you have any, yeah. Patrick, it's a complicated issue, no doubt. Do you kind of see what he's asking here?
I think so. I mean, so he's referencing an employer can't force someone to work 7 consecutive days, okay? And you're permitted overtime in Illinois for time and a half pay after 40 hours, not daily, it's weekly overtime over 40. So I think he's talking about where those two things
intersect.
Is that correct?
Wait, so the double time, what do you get paid double time for, Ralph?
So it's an agreement that if you do work on a seventh day, if production needs, say, hey, we need you to work, that you'll get paid double time for those hours that you work.
Okay.
So it's an agreement to waive your 1 day in rest, 7 act day off, waive that for the double time pay.
Mm-hmm.
But then the company turns around and says, well, now on that 48 hours, it's straight time because you already received premium pay during that week.
I see what they're saying. That makes sense. Yeah, they're saying, like, look, we paid you double time for that Monday. That was the seventh day in a row you worked. Now, when we line up your week of hours worked, since we already paid you a premium for what you worked Monday, anything over 40 hours in that week, we're not paying you a premium. We're not going to pay you time and a half because you already earned a premium pay time on the double time. Did that make sense? Is that what you're asking, Ralph?
That's exactly what I'm asking.
That is a quirky one. Do you know that off the top of your head, Patrick? I don't know if that's legal
No. Well, to me, it's like you've got two different things, right? So you still have to be paid time and a half for those that exceed 40, even if you're paid double time for that specific shift.
So you're paid double time on Monday, let's say,
yeah,
and then by Saturday now you're over 40 hours. You're saying that on Saturday, now that if you're over that 40-hour threshold, you should get time and a half for that.
Of course.
Regardless of what happened on Monday.
It doesn't matter. That's an apple and an orange.
Right.
Companies
would try and do this all the time.
Yeah.
I would say that the double time paid for the seventh day in a row is absolutely independent of any time and a half that you would get within a time.
So I said it's an apple and orange.
So, yep. Ralph, did you say that that's what they said the policy was?
Exactly.
Well,
language in the contract, yes. So this is something I'm starting bargaining. To do here.
Well, you need to call Patrick Dolan. Do you have his number?
I do. In fact, I think I left a message on his voicemail already. So,
wow!
Excellent. Something to
how many
do
days
later
ago?
On
this
day today?
Ago? Is it today?
Well, now you're gonna
now I don't have to go to the Jewel with my wife.
Yeah,
I have to work.
You're calling back.
I have to work,
Ralph. We appreciate the phone call and the extra little nudge for Patrick. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, I appreciate your help.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Well, you'll call Ralph back.
Yeah,
I know you will. You got a lot of callers from WGN.
Yeah, I do.
You got to go through them. It takes some time.
Yeah.
Now Jane is back, I believe. Fingers crossed. Jane, you had a whistleblower question?
Hello?
Hello. Well, we got more there. Jane, is your radio on by any chance? Tony, do you mind just talking to Jane, making sure the radio's off in the background? Folks, if you ever call into a radio station, you've probably heard this over the years, or if you ever watch Frasier, never have the radio on in the background. It's like a 7 or 8 second delay. We end up hearing a conversation. I'm not mean to Jane. This is something that a lot of people do.
I'm not saying you are.
Or there's a problem with the phone call. Other callers
Mike
can hear.
Mike does it all the time.
Mike, yeah, when Mike calls in, he's on radio delay.
I know, it's incredible.
Tell you what, why don't we take a break? We're going to recalibrate here. 312-981-7200. I'm being a little sassy today, Mike.
Maybe you're tired. Overly tired, John.
You're tired.
You know, let's give you the benefit. I mean, you start off harsh on Easter.
Yeah.
Now you're kind of
cranky.
Cantankerous.
Yeah.
Cantankerous?
I'm getting all my cantankerousity out before the Blackhawks game.
Well, you're doing a good job.
All right. 219 on WGN. We'll tackle a lot more after this. Patrick Dolan, Mike Leonard here. Jane is online, too. Fingers crossed, Jane. I know we've had some connection issues. Are you there?
That's
first?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Here you are.
I am.
All right. So what's your question?
So my question is, I have worked in the medical field for the same employer for 41 years. He recently told me that he lost the profit-sharing money, and I reached out to Department of Labor on Wednesday. They called me Thursday. They said that there's a time limit, I guess. The last claim he filed was like 1993. And I'm reaching out to them now because I'm of the age of retiring. And they spoke to me that there's other issues in regards to the employer, tax fraud, tax evasion.
Yeah. And they, quote unquote, lost the profit sharing money, meaning the money you were counting on for retirement?
Yep.
Jane, I'm so sorry that you're dealing with this.
So am I. So I... I heard you guys mention about a settlement agreement because obviously I don't want to stay in that situation being that I can retire. So how do I do that?
I don't even know how you get settlement money if there's no money. Patrick, start talking here.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Under the Illinois Wage Payment and Collection Act, you can file a claim either with the Illinois Department of Labor or a lawsuit in circuit court. For 10 years back from today, for example. So we can't go back that far, but unlike every other law in the country, a 10-year statute of limitations for a wage claim is really long. The issue, of course, is your ability to collect. So even if we could file that claim for 10 years, and you can sort of add that up, and there's statutory penalties and damages and attorney's fees and a bunch of stuff that really can balloon that number, sometimes double or triple that number, The problem is collection. And so if this guy doesn't have any money, even if you put liens against him or his practice or whatever it is, that might not get you anything either. But you do have a claim that you can file. You have a 10-year statute of limitations.
Meaning you can go back 10 years worth of the profit-sharing money she said she should.
From the day you file, you can go back 10 years, okay? Because wages is very liberally defined in Illinois under the Illinois Wage Payment and Collection Act. And
it can be missed PTO. It can be all sorts of things.
Anything. Severance, whatever it is, right? So if we're talking about profit-sharing, which is a part of her compensation package, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the claim that you can bring, but I'm very concerned about our ability to collect.
Maybe this is just me being naive about how profit sharing works, but is there never money put in, like for a 401k, I see that dollar amount that I have in my account that is completely separate from the employer at that point. Is profit sharing done a whole different way?
No, it's analogous to that. She should have been provided information with regard to the profit sharing monies that should have been set aside for her. And it's something, I look at that all the time when I gather information about compensation, someone's comp, I'll get all of that kind of stuff, including the history of theoretically, it should be deposits for profit sharing, so I can see what I'm going after. But the problem is, it sounds like he's not just defrauded her, a lot of other people, and he took the money.
Well, so like at the end of a year, it isn't most of the money. If you earned a profit share, that money should be put into an account that then grows over time, right?
That's theoretically how it works.
And it's now separated from the company. That money is no longer in the company's hands. That's your hands.
Yes.
So Jane, I have to ask a follow up. Have they? So was it just like promises of
there's paperwork, there's statements. The problem is I've also been in contact with the accountant that they basically say he used that money to start another business.
Oh my goodness.
That's why the Department of Labor was like, this is way more than you getting your money.
So
you should get your money, but then I don't know what.
Oh my gosh. So you're saying that you were given statements of how much your account of profit sharing is worth, but that money was still tied to him and this company. It had never exited into another account.
It's all in his name, but now he used that and closed that at some point and started another business. Mm.
Under the Misery Loves Company, I've had many, many clients over the years with very similar issues, that they've been defrauded by whoever was supposed to put those sort of monies aside. And my challenge is getting money from that person. It's not whether you have a good claim, you have a good claim.
Oh my God.
You got the paperwork, we have the numbers, we can do the math to file the claim. I think there's probably a liability there, even if he doesn't defend the lawsuit, which he probably won't if he's, you know, not defending any claims, who knows? But the problem is again, but you know what? I've been down that road trying to collect that money. So it's possible.
Well, let's also talk about the fact that it could be a crime, you know,
at both the
federal level and state level. So, you know, you have to consider at what point do you want to get, you know, prosecutors involved or the attorney general's office. And then it seems like there might be a good claim against the accounting firm, of course.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. At the end of the day, someone has lied or done something wrong besides maybe just one person. Is it an accountant or an accounting firm, Jane? Do you know? Is just one of his buddies is the accountant?
Yeah, so it's actually two of the accountants that we've dealt with, and they both supported me and supplied me with the information, and that his corporate tax return states that he made deposits into it from 1996 to 2008.
Oh, wow.
So maybe they didn't know.
Yeah, they might have. The accountants may not have known something's really going on. And he's obviously taking the tax benefit. As someone who pays into a SEP IRA for my one employee, who is me, in a S Corp, which is totally legal, but just putting that out there, that money that I put into a SEP IRA, I then obviously don't have to pay taxes. That's a business expense.
That's the point.
So what she's saying is that he was putting it in or saying that he was putting it in, taking the write off.
There's so many civil or criminal claims there. The question is, what path does she want to go down? And it's going to be either path is going to be tough to get money from this guy.
I would blow the whistle as hard as you can, Jane, and then start up a GoFundMe. I know that seems so shameless, but Jane, you've been defrauded out of your retirement, and you may not get all the money you deserve to get, but there should be a big old light shined on what happened, and I think this person should go to jail for what they did, not knowing all the facts of the case, and obviously don't say this person's name on the radio. But Jane, I would talk to one of these guys that are my panelists today, at least to get more information.
I would love to.
All right, so I'm going to give you both their numbers. Jane, if you don't get it right now, we'll read it again before the end of the show. Patrick Dolan for employment law, she could call you, 312-332-7800.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick could at least help you start to think about that. Mike, could Jane call you too? Is there something
just
you can do?
Just to discuss the criminal angle and possible whether that's worth pursuing in terms of reporting them and trying to pursue that, and maybe that will put pressure on him. But, you know, who knows? But, yeah, 312-380-6559 just for the criminal law implications.
312-380-6559. 6559. Wow. I need to get your
on the other
phone number
arm.
On the other arm.
Right.
His is, as you can see, tattooed on my left arm.
Yeah.
This costs more, Mike, to get
the
tattoo.
I don't merit. I mean, I try to bring sandwiches in to curry favorites. It doesn't go very far.
It just got you the area code.
312-6-3.
Oh, my God. 312-380-6559. And, John, my name is Mike Leonard.
Federal defense
attorney. You've met me before?
A couple times. You gave me a roast beef sandwich. Time for the news on WGN. And, Patrick, I think Mike is disappointed we're not talking about more criminal cases here on WGN.
Well, there's more stuff to talk about. You know, okay. So there's some great things in the news. But if you guys choose
life,
not to
life
cover
is disappointing
current events,
sometimes.
I
stop
understand.
Talking over each other, guys.
Yeah, if you guys don't want to talk about current events, I get it. But there are some big criminal law stories.
There are?
Yeah, of course.
There's big courts things happening in the world today.
Huge. I mean, do we have time for that today?
Probably not. First, we got a question for Patrick Dolan.
Okay, good.
Hello, says the 312. Oh. I'm employed in Illinois. My current contract expired in 2023, but this person has still been working. An arbitration hearing is set for next month, and the arbitrator has said that there'll be a decision rendered no later than 60 days. So essentially, within 90 days, this person's going to know what their new contract should be. It went to arbitration for some reason. I don't know the details. This person wants to know is if they retire before that decision is made, will I be entitled to the retro pay for the hours I worked since the contract expired and there was an increase in salary? First of all, I'm assuming that the person is saying that if they kept on working and the arbitrator made their decision, they're going to get the back pay for what they should have made from when the previous contract expired. Is that normal?
Yes. Yes.
Companies say, all right, whatever the arbitrator decides will then compensate you. Like when you get a raise or a new job and they're like, they give you back pay back to the date you got the raise.
Sure.
Okay. This person wants to know, though, I'm thinking about retiring. If I retire within this 90-day window when the decision comes, are they still going to give me back pay back to the date of the last contract till the day I retire?
They absolutely should. I mean, you've got to be paid for your work, right? So if you should be paid for all of the work you did after the contract expired in 23 through the date of retirement.
But there's no sense of like the arbitrator is just going to go, oh, wait, he retired? Never mind.
No, absolutely not. I mean, that would be bizarre and shocking. And then the person wouldn't get paid what they should have been paid for the work that they did.
Should they call you just to double check everything?
Yeah, because I have some questions about the arbitration, like what is the form, what are the claims, that kind of stuff.
312-332-7800 is Patrick Dolan's number.
You know that number very well. Not Mike's.
Mike Leonard is a federal defense attorney. It's 312-380-6559.
Well done, John.
Thank
well
you.
Done.
I'm write
well,
it down on a sticky.
Yeah, it's a sticky on my right arm. Louie's got a question. Let's see if we've got an answer. Hey, Louie, you're on WGN.
How are you guys doing today?
Great, great, great,
great. Great.
All right, here's the deal. I'm a truck driver. I haul out of the rail yards out in Chicago and out in Joliet and Elwood. And there was a lawsuit brought up against the rails, against BNSF. And then there was another one against Canadian National out there in Harvey and so on about used to have to scan your fingerprints on the way in.
Mm-hmm.
This guy Rogers sued the BNSF.
Don't say any names. Don't say any names. No names. No names.
Well, okay. It's a public record.
It's a public record. Never mind. Okay.
It's Rogers versus BNSF.
Okay.
All right. So it turned into a class action. Now, everybody got these checks. First, they sent out a check for $500 a couple months back. And then these guys got checks for $2,000 just a few weeks ago. And I've been doing this for 18 years. I didn't get nothing, so I've been emailing them. the people that handle the
checks, the distribution,
back and forth, and they wouldn't answer. They would say they were going to look into it, and they wouldn't answer me. Then I'd email them again.
Was there a period in which you had to sign up for this class action lawsuit? Like, when there was all the lawsuits against, like, the social media companies, there was, like, a window that I had to sign up for, and then I got, like, the $400 from Meta or Facebook or whatever it was. But a lot of people who missed the deadline by a day, they didn't get that. Was there any language like that, Louis, that you know of?
No, there was no. You didn't have to sign up. What you could do was exclude yourself.
Oh, okay.
Opt out.
Yeah, which is a common thing. Like they say, you can opt out of the class. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're part of the class if the court approves the class. No. Yeah.
Okay, so what do you guys think about this? Louis's not getting the answers he wants.
Well, it sounds like a BIPA privacy suit, in which there's been a lot of those. And I think BIPA, BIPA, or is it BIPPA?
What does it stand for? You have no idea.
Biometric, et cetera, Privacy Act. Uh-huh. But it's been huge in Illinois.
Oh, so it's the same thing as the social media one I was talking about.
This relates to employers using devices to, like, for instance, fingerprints to get into a building or eye scans
without
or whatever.
Proper approval.
The idea it invades your privacy. Right. I think he's just got to get more aggressive with the company. Maybe he has Patrick Dolan write one of his nasty letters to them.
Yeah, happy to.
Get some Patrick Dolan letterhead. Yeah. Does it say Conti and Dolan on your letterhead? That gives it a lot more weight.
Yeah, because Karen.
Because Karen.
I'm second.
Do average citizens, are they allowed to use the letterhead, or do they actually have to go through Patrick?
They have to go through Patrick. Okay.
I think so, yeah. It's probably a better idea.
Someone looks at the letterhead and they go, Karen Conti. Oh, no. And then they're like, oh, Patrick, who's that guy?
Louis?
Yeah, I think you got to take a more aggressive posture. I mean, sometimes if they blow you off, sometimes it takes a lawyer letter to get involved. But I mean, obviously you don't have to do that, but sometimes that's where you get your answer.
Yeah, Louis. And you sound like, I hope you take this the right way. I don't think I'd want to mess with you. You drove trucks and worked in the rail yards. I'd get a little more aggressive, Louis, and call Patrick.
Well, no, they're not going to do nothing. Unless my question is, can I file my own lawsuit against them?
Ooh, I don't know.
Well, the class, I mean, who knows? It depends upon how the class action was resolved. If it was resolved by a settlement agreement, you're just talking about getting money that you're entitled to, right? So if you're part of that class, your rights would have been already adjudicated.
I put my hand up, Mike. That means end the
time. Sorry.
That's a good thought.
Go ahead, Louis.
But the guy who originally filed it got hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I don't know.
As a settlement. I mean, you can look it up. It was on the news.
Yeah, I believe you, Louis. I just don't know all the details of it. And I don't know, when a class action lawsuit gets settled up, is that what you were saying, Mike, before I really put my hand up? That's the end of the line.
If he was part of the class, if the class was approved, and if a settlement of the class action was approved, then it's a question of distributing the monies from the class. So if he was part of that, he'd be bound by that. Now it's a question of collecting his money. So maybe call Patrick and try to get aggressive with the company.
Because he didn't opt out. And by the way, the named plaintiff in a class action always gets more money.
So I guess what I'm saying is, that was the point of opting out. When you said, a lot of people opt out, that's why. Because
they want to file their own claim.
So, Louis, I think by not opting out, it seems like you've lost your ability to sue on your own. But I would still call Patrick Dolan to either try and get what you're entitled to or just chat through it with him, okay?
All right. And the number is 380-6059?
Nope. The number is 312. Yeah. And I'll say it a couple more times. 312-332-7800. 312-332-7800. That is how you reach Patrick Dolan. If you're in trouble with, and I'm not saying Louis is, but anyone in trouble with the law, 312. Oh, I messed it up. 58. No. What's your number?
Wow,
Mike?
John, I'm just going to leave the studio.
No, 312-580-6559.
No. 312-380-6559. LeonardTroyLawyers.com.
I think I'm going to take a break. I hope I'm still allowed
to
be back on the air.
You need a long break, John. Maybe we should just lay on the couch.
You're sleep deprived because of David.
Yeah, but it's just a good reason. Okay, I'm going to take this break. So you guys be quiet, turn off your mics, and we'll be back on WGN. Patrick Dolan, Mike Leonard, continuing conversations even after we come back on the air. Guys, you guys ready to be serious here and do a radio
show? We are serious, John.
You see this red light that's in front of me?
No.
When that goes on, zip the lip. That's all I'm saying.
Mike,
I'm just kidding.
Mike, do you want to go?
Please don't.
It's getting late in the program.
I mean, I could fill 9 more minutes by myself. I've done sure it plenty of times.
Believe me, and we all love it when you do that.
But please don't make me today.
I don't know.
Go Cory Booker on us.
Oh, with the filibuster.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. He went 25 hours.
25? Okay.
Honestly, I mean, I'm not sure why that was so lauded. I mean, I think he's a great guy, but I honestly don't see a great purpose to it. Sorry. Maybe the public disagrees with me.
Wow, we're going to go down a rabbit hole now.
I think some people who support his policies and who he has said, hey, he stood up for something he believed in. And I think there was also the element that he broke the record of Strom Thurmond, a noted segregationist, and Cory Booker as a black man doing that, knocking that off the record books, was something he wore as a badge of honor. And I think that's something that people could respect on both sides of the aisle, just knocking that person off the top of that list.
That part I like.
But there is the element that it was a filibuster by the classic rules, but there wasn't anything really being filibustered against, right? Mm. Like we've seen filibusters to stop legislation from happening because it's an impactful bill or something. And I think what his filibuster lacked was it wasn't like there was this big bill that was going to get pushed through unless someone stood in the way.
So wait, what was he doing then? I don't even know.
He was filibustering.
About what though?
He was,
why?
Well, it was probably for headlines, to make a point to the Strom Thurmond thing, like I was saying, to advocate that Democrats are maybe powerless to do a lot of things right now congressionally, but we can stand up for these issues and make hay and make some headlines and put our points forward. I think that's probably his argument. But it just didn't come at a critical juncture legislatively, right? Mm. Like it wasn't like, here's this huge bill that's about to happen. Cory Booker is in the way of this thing. Let's see if we can get the hay that we need in order to do it. There's also the interesting aspects, Mike and Patrick, about that's how filibustering used to be. That used to be the only way to filibuster bills, was to actually talk and prevent them from happening.
Right.
Now there's a de facto filibuster that exists in the U.S. Senate, which is essentially called a cloture vote, which is now in Senate rules. It's not in any amendment. It's not in the Constitution. It's just how filibusters are done these days, meaning you need 60 senators to vote yay on cloture, not necessarily on the content of the bill. You need 60 votes on cloture to advance the bill to be coming to a vote 24 hours later. And so a lot of people – I'm not done with my point. Thank you,
right.
Patrick.
Go ahead.
A lot of people say, why don't we go back to the old school way? If you want a filibuster, you have to filibuster legit. You have to stand up there and talk until you're done. And if other senators want to do it, that's how you delay legislation, versus this watered down filibuster that exists now, some people would say, which is this cloture vote requiring 60. Did I explain that pretty okay?
Mike and I are gone. We're in the car leaving.
Yeah.
I'm just listening on the radio in the car.
The one point that I think resonated, I think he was trying to say, like, look, if you oppose policies, because there are a lot of controversial policies, you need to do something about it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the thing that resonated with me. I don't think the public in general necessarily cared. I think politicians cared and some of the media cared, but I don't think it necessarily resonated with the public. But I liked his point, like, hey, if you oppose a lot of these controversial policies, you know, you got to do something about it. You can't just talk about it. And even though he's talking about a lot, that's kind of was his overall point, you know, to try to motivate the party and whoever, whatever your interests are, to actually get up and do something. So I liked that. But I don't think it really, other than breaking the record, I don't think it necessarily resonated with the public.
I think it's because it didn't have that linchpin of like, oh, this stopped blank from happening.
Yeah, we're stopping a particular
vote. There was a huge election the next day in which there was results in Florida and Wisconsin. And then we've had Liberation Day, the tariffs since. And I feel like it's kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit. I do want to give you guys both a chance to talk about. Well, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Mike has some criminal issues he'd love to talk about. No, we'd like to hear him.
I've got something.
Oh, okay. About candy?
No. One of the big discussion points now is the idea of, should a district court judge get to dictate through a ruling what does or doesn't happen in this country? And now this is a debate that is raging, and the Trump administration and some Republicans in Congress want to put forward legislation that would essentially block district court judges' rulings from affecting actual any change, deferring to the Supreme Court to ultimately decide which way things go. Mike Leonard, your thoughts?
In my view, nonsensical. I mean, the idea that district courts all of a sudden are deciding important issues, that's what they've been doing for 200 years. You know, cases and controversies come before a certain court on a certain issue. They make a ruling. That's what's been going on forever, right?
And on both sides.
And then if you don't like that ruling, you can appeal to the Circuit Court of Appeals, and eventually it gets to the Supreme Court. To try to turn the Supreme Court in, like, they're going to hear all the cases now is absurd. Mm-hmm. They are traditionally limited to deciding constitutional questions and, you know, resolving splits amongst the Circuit Courts of Appeals. So to say we're just going to eliminate the district courts is absurd in my view.
Well, I don't think it eliminates it. I think they're saying that a district court can rule what they rule, but nothing would go into effect until the Supreme Court either confirmed it or threw it away.
No, but the problem is that takes years. So you have to you appeal the court to the Circuit Court, right, the Appellate Circuit Court. That might take 2 years. The Supreme Court only takes probably 5% or less. Maybe it's probably 3%, maybe 1% of the cases. So the Supreme Court may never hear the case. So to say we're going to wait around for years and see if the Supreme Court takes the case and see what they're going to say, to me, makes no sense.
Is another criticism that the district court shouldn't be able to rule on an issue and have a nationwide impact on their ruling? Isn't that also what they're saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, historically, that's the way it's done, too. So
100%. Mifepristone was nearly thrown off the shelves because of a district court ruling held up by an appellate court and went to the Supreme Court, who ultimately decided that was wrong. But in the meantime, unless there's an injunction put by the judge themselves, who, by the way, that happens often. A judge says, this is my ruling, but I realize this rocks the boat entirely. I'll pause the actual effect of this order until the appellate court decides what's right or wrong. Sometimes that's very appropriate to do and understood. But yes, this seems to go against centuries of how the court system has worked. And I always find it a little bit, and both parties do this, they make a rule or law that they think is going to benefit them in the short term without realizing the ramifications that they could have against them in the future. And I feel like this is a whopper of one for the GOP.
Yeah, I think it's a horrible thing to say to a federal court judge, like, we're not going to listen to what you say. You know, if the Supreme Court tells us to do something different, we'll listen to them. You can't do that. I don't think that any judge in a federal court system, regardless of what party they're appointed by, whether Democrat or Republican, no one wants to hear that, oh, we'll just ignore you if we choose and let it go up the pipe. It's a horrible precedent to be setting.
I agree.
Okay. We're out of time. Patrick Dolan, Employment Law, 312-332-7800.
That's it.
Mike Leonard, Federal Defense Attorney, Whistleblower Laws, 312-380-6559.
John, you just want some jelly beans.
We're going to take a break. We got news coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Thanks for listening, everybody.